You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Connor Coulson. This is Minute 43. This minute opens on a close-up of the worms crawling near an ampule, being exposed to the mutagen, and ends with Shaw running after the engineer head, which has fallen off the back of the ATV. I'm not certain which track we hear during this scene of the oncoming storm. I think it might be a blend of two tracks, Too Close and Debris. There are a few songs on the soundtrack that I can't identify where they were used in the film specifically, so I'm going to assume they just edited and mixed things a little differently for the released version of the soundtrack, which is not uncommon. Though if you think this is another track, let me know. Either way, the beat continues to intensify as the tension builds. Paired with the choir, the music almost seems to blend with the sounds of the storm. Speaking of the difference between the soundtrack and the music we hear in the film, most movies have, when it comes to the Oscar season, they have a for your consideration version of the soundtrack, which includes absolutely everything. I don't know if they had one for Prometheus, but there's definitely one for Alien Covenant, which features at least 5 or 10 more tracks that we don't hear on the release version of the soundtrack, including, if I recall correctly, a theme for Walter, which I would have loved to hear, because listening to the Covenant soundtrack, I'm not quite sure if Walter gets his own musical cue. The crew race back to the ATVs. They are understandably tense, but keeping their cool. I know, they managed to do something without making an obvious mistake. What a miracle. The sky, which had never been particularly friendly, is now darkened by the oncoming storm. The brass and orange of the vehicles really stand out, and this will be a focal point for the scene. It's the brightest colour and the easiest thing to track in all the chaos. As they speed away, the camera sweeps up to take one last look at the ominous and indifferent skull atop the temple before it is enveloped by dust and debris. Just before that, Charlie says, "Damn it, they've already taken off." Who? Gang's all here except for Milburn and Fifield, but they aren't missing any vehicles. They came here with 2 ATVs and 1 rover. So this line doesn't make any sense. What the hell is he talking about? Side note, remember Jackson, the security officer? Yeah, he was all suited up and ready to go, but he disappears for the rest of the expedition and perhaps the rest of the film. They made a big deal about him bringing weapons, and then he doesn't even factor into the following scenes. What the hell? We definitely only see our 6 main characters leave the Prometheus. So maybe Jackson was just intended to be on standby back on the ship, but that doesn't make any sense either. Given that he is wearing a spacesuit and was very clearly intent on joining the expedition. A wide shot shows us just how minuscule the crew is against the forces of nature. There can be no doubt that as contrived as the circumstances that brought them to the situation were, this scene is epic. The storm is of biblical proportions and there's a real sense of tension and urgency as they race back to the Prometheus. I would even say this scene rivals the sandstorm in Mad Max Fury Road. Shaw tells Holloway to go faster, which is pretty pointless, especially because it's Charlie. Have you met? Do you think he would hold back, really? We then cut to Yannick inside the ship. We get a sense of the contrast between the chaos outside and the calm safety within the Prometheus. However, I would have liked a bit more emphasis on this. When we cut to the interior of the ship, it should have been dead silent, which then reminds the viewer just how crazy things have gotten outside. But that's more of a personal preference, really. I've always loved that trope or technique, if you will. Of course, it wouldn't be the Prometheus crew if they didn't mess something up, and in this moment, just as they almost make it to safety, Shaw drops the engineer head. If you look closely, both of her arms are up, holding onto the bars of the vehicle. Why? They just went over a little bump, but that's about it. This thing is so precious to her that she was willing to sacrifice her life for it. She wouldn't just let it go like that. She would at least have the straps around her arm or something. Contrived. If I had to sum this movie up in one word, that would be it. Contrived. Almost every single plot point happens because it must, not because it should. And again, with a little more thought and a slight rewrite, this could have been fine. Okay, what do we need to accomplish in this scene? We need to show that Elizabeth is willing to die for the fossil, and that Charlie is willing to die for Elizabeth. Why not have a strong gust of wind suddenly throw her from the vehicle and the bag out of her hand? You know, it just comes out of nowhere like a crosswind. She tumbles, and then she picks herself up. She doesn't even look back at the ship. Instead, she searches frantically for the bag, which is luckily only a few feet away. Then things can play out pretty much as they do in the film. She gets hit by the full brunt of the storm, and Charlie comes to rescue her. But now she doesn't seem like a complete moron. It was an accident, and it was totally out of her control. Interesting to note, I haven't heard anyone complain about this particular moment. I think it's because it happens so quickly, you don't quite register what happened. But on closer inspection, it's ridiculous. It almost looks like she did it on purpose. She's like, oh no, I've dropped the head. Guess I should go after it. I am putting this down on the list of flaws, and it's one that was so easy to fix. It's actually only the sixth flaw on the list, but given that we are just over 40 minutes in, that's an average of more than one every 10 minutes, so take that as you will. Time for a bit of costume talk. It's been a while. I plan on starting my EVA suit at some point. It's a shame I haven't completed it yet, because I'm always interested to know what the experience of wearing a particular costume is like. How it might have informed a performance, or what challenges and opportunities it might have presented. I can, however, say, having made and worn the grey jumpsuit, or boiler suit, that David wears early in the film, it is definitely not made for a human. Jumpsuits, when they're not made of stretchy fabric, can only be so form-fitting before it becomes uncomfortable and impractical. But David's costume was tailored to perfection, and was clearly not designed for practicality or comfort in mind. I think Janti made these choices deliberately. Most of his garments would be very restrictive and uncomfortable for a human. The tight fit, the high collars, these are not the clothes a human would comfortably wear on a day-to-day basis. It does make you move like David, though. It forces your posture to be a certain way. Jumpsuits aren't easy to get in and out of at the best of times, but David also wears a belt with his. By contrast, the other androids in the series are dressed in quite relaxed and comfortable clothes. This jumpsuit makes a return, as worn by Walter in some promotional materials for Alien Covenant. I don't think it's the same one from Prometheus, as the cut is slightly looser, and Fassbender was, of course, considerably more muscular at that point, having trained for Assassin's Creed. Walter forgoes the belt, which seems to suit his character. He's less formal. I do have a fascination with what designers like to dress androids in. I'm all about the android aesthetic right now. The general consensus is very neat and structured, restrictive and formal. They are meant to look better than us. And what's more, they don't have any need for comfort. On the other hand, you have androids who are meant to blend in completely. This could be applied to all the other androids in the Alien series. Walter's wardrobe is very casual and comfy, hoodies, joggers, and sneakers. This reflects his personality. He is supposed to be friendly and approachable, rather than aloof and superior, like his older brother. Ash wears a fairly baggy two-piece uniform, the same as the rest of the crew of the Nostromo. Bishop wears a flight suit, which, for some reason, has the collar removed, and that always bugged me, just it doesn't look right. But overall, it is in keeping with what everyone else is wearing. Anna Lee Call in Resurrection is also seen in a jumpsuit that looks fairly comfortable and practical, and oh-so-90s futuristic. I guess what I've come to realise is that the way David is styled is meant to convey his lack of humanity. He is an object, a product, whereas the other androids are meant to blend in, so they are dressed in a way that is perceived to be more human. This is a notion that extends to fashion in general. When people are dressed formally or in a uniform, they seem too perfect. It hides the humanity a bit. It is a kind of artificial construct that hides our true nature. I think any man knows that sudden change you experience when you put on a suit. Or any woman can speak to how different it feels to wear heels and have a full face of makeup. You've donned a kind of armor or mask, which I don't necessarily see as a falsehood. It's just that our best selves take some effort. But for an android, there is no effort involved. Alright, that about covers it. This is Coulson signing off. You can find me on TravianDesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by a Minute on Facebook.